You are now entering a world that is neither real nor fiction. A world where creatures roam among us. A world where witches fly across the moon on their brooms. A world where ghosts say hi, and one of them has a big head but yet is very friendly to all of us all. You are now entering the Ultra Nerd Podcast. Hello everyone, my name is Zane, and welcome back to another episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. So before I continue with Halloween month, I just want to say, for every time you guys listen to one of my podcast episodes, you're actually helping me in return. So every time you listen to a podcast, I'm slowly getting small revenues here and there from Anchor helping me out. So in return, you could help me build this podcast into a much more better, full-fledged kind of podcast. You could help me pay the bills, and you could help me put food on the table. And most importantly, you could also help me keep the lights on and to flush that toilet. So let's get into it, shall we? So if you're like most people, instead of just looking at a TV screen or at your phone, you would want to take a break from it, right? So you turn off your phone, leave it in your room, probably turn on your TV somewhere just for background noise, sit down and read a good book. And that's today's topic, is horror stories. And to be honest, horror stories withstood the test of times many decades from today. So they take a form of many different things. They could either be told over a bonfire with like folklore or legends. They could be told in your book with the ideas of Stephen King or Frankenstein or even Dracula. Or they can be told nowadays through internet, TVs. What I meant to say was phones, your laptop, or even tablets. But let's take one man's work, for example, that withstood the test of times and being told to every school for English class or like any kind of English theme class today for high schools, middle schools, and even colleges. The man I'm talking about is Edgar Allan Poe. You may not heard of him, but for any book you kind of read, that is a book from Edgar Allan Poe, such as The Raven, The Count of Amontillado, Telltale Heart, or even one called The Mask of the Red Death. Now, to be honest, Edgar didn't have, suffice to say, the best life growing up. I mean, three important people in his life died from tuberculosis. His stepdad didn't give him a single dime. He had to go to the army. He had to drop back out. And his death was mysterious in some ways. But even though he may not have the best life, his work is something else to think about and to read, too. Some of his work could be scary to people back then, but they weren't scary to us now. And it's just the type of imagery he gives us and the idea that he tries to put out on paper that makes us want to read more of his work and think about what is this man and who is he really. I mean, back then, I believe some people in the 80s or in the 70s, when they were making movies on his work, they were calling it From the Mind of Edgar Allan Poe, or like, In the Mind of a Madman, or so on. And to be honest, after the death of his wife, and slash his cousin, but I'm not going to get into that bullshit, after the death of his wife, he might have gone down or spiraled out of control of insanity. And that's something to think about. But one story I want to talk about is a story known as The Raven. During his time, The Raven was big. It was scary to a lot of people because, like I previously just said, it may not be scary to us now, but back then, it was scary to a lot of people. Hell, even people stated that they were having nightmares of this raven flying through their windows, going onto their door or chandelier door, and uttering the very words, nevermore. And the story behind the raven does have its own symbolism that could relate to the death of his wife, whereas it takes place where a man is mourning the death of his wife. And basically, it also might have a theme with, like I previously said, that he might have gone a little bit insane after the death of his wife, because the man believed that there would be, no, he did believe that a raven came through his window and landed on his chamber door, and uttering the very words, "Nevermore." And every time he talked to the raven, the raven would always say, "Nevermore," as if it was like a type of idea that his wife is dead and there's nothing else he could do about it. To us, that may not be that much, but to a lot of people back then, that was something to fear about. And that's something that is scary. Because, to be honest, back in post time, not many people lived that long, to be honest with you. I mean, before technology, like, people lived from 30 to 40 years old. 30 to 40 in that range number, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, back then, before Poe was born, I mean, people were lucky enough to be living for 20 years, to be fair, or even lucky enough to even live past 30. But besides just that, Poe's work of the Raven was something to gawk at because it did have a type of idea of Poe's own sanity and might have also related to Poe's depression as well. And not only that, another story that might have been a little bit disturbing in some cases for him was a story known as Annabel Lee. Now, Annabel Lee also relates to the relationship between Poe and his wife. And the idea was that he would always have this, like, at one point in the poem, he would have, like, this type of idea that we see his relationship with this character, between these two characters, I mean, is always good. But then later on, it starts to be a little bit more possessive, as if Poe doesn't want to. No, wait. Okay, yeah, I'm just going to refer to it because it is kind of relating to that. So it's kind of like referring to that Poe doesn't want his wife to leave him because in his life, he did have like this dependency to have a female acquaintance with him at all times. But when he said in the poem that the angels wanted to take Annabel Lee away, it more or less was like thinking to himself that he doesn't want to lose his wife. And another story before I continue, I want to talk about that does show the idea of insanity in this man was a story called The Telltale Hearts. So that story begins where a man, who's our narrator, and also most likely clinically insane man as well, is talking to us and saying that how much he's not insane, but yet he's insane to think about that a man with a crow-like, no, vulture, that's it, a vulture eye, was staring at him all the time, and he was disturbed by this man with the vulture eye. So eventually he hides away, and when he fails his sneak check, he eventually tries to kill him up there and up front while the man with the vulture eye tries to go to bed. So the neighbors were complaining about the noise. They call the cops, and the guy had to quickly literally chop up the man with the vulture eye, his body, and bury it in the floorboards. So when the police came up, the guy was basically saying how not insane he was by saying to the cops that he doesn't know what happened, by saying he's not insane multiple times here and there. And he also believed that the cops, if I'm correct, I might be wrong, it's been a while, the cops would be laughing at him, but they wouldn't be laughing at him in reality. He's thinking of that in his head. And not only that, he's slowly hearing the heart beating of the man that he killed under the floorboards. And eventually he just snapped and screwed the pooch on himself. Now that could be supported to Poe's own sanity because eventually you do snap and you do go down this road of madness sometimes. It happens to the best of us. But this can be something else in Poe's life. I just want to say that straight up. But not only that, no. Yeah, that's probably it about Poe. But even though Poe's not with us anymore, his life is something else to think about. Because even though he may have not the best, like I just said, his work is something else. because this is a man's feelings. He put his heart and his soul into lots of his works here and there. So let's talk about one person that I've been talking about a lot on my podcast recently that was probably the inspiration of Poe, H.P. Lovecraft. Now, to be honest, I love H.P. Lovecraft's work, and I recently saw the movie The Colors of Outer Space starring Nicolas Cage. I didn't want to talk about it because a YouTuber was talking about it, and I didn't want to steal his thunder. And basically, let's just get to the point that H.P. Lovecraft's work is, I want to say, somewhat similar to Poe, where instead of having this type of symbolism about his deceased wife, it was more like this idea of a gawking fear of reality itself, of some things we may or may not understand, and the dreadness of the sea, and there's something even bigger than we are out there in the known universe. And much like Poe, H.P. Lovecraft also didn't have the bestest of life either. Let's probably say as least Poe was able to at least get out of the house, because it's best to say that, let's say what's not wrong with H.P. Lovecraft to begin with. I mean, his mother kept him in all the time after his dad died. He didn't go to school that much, I don't believe so, if I'm not mistaken. He doesn't have that many friends growing up as a kid. After his mom died, he fell into a much more greater depression. That's something to note. And basically, he was racist. I stated that in the first podcast talking about movies that relate to H.P. Lovecraft. So, yeah, there's that. And not only that, he also had this type of fear of the ocean as well. And he basically hated anything and everything that was in his hometown of State Rhode Island. So, yeah, there's that. But what I remember previously stating that, despite the fact of him being racist, I don't see it as something to know about in most of his work. What's to note about is the idea of what he tries to perceive, but the idea of the fear of the unknown, as he shows on most of his work, and the idea that we are small and the world is much bigger than we are, and we are just like pawns to a bigger game. That's something to fear about and to think about as well. So I'm going to go over a couple of stories that may support this idea. One of them perceiving to be probably one of my favorite works thus far, known as The Shadow of Over Innsmouth. So basically, The Shadow of Over Innsmouth is told by our mysterious narrator that we don't know much about, but all he did tell us is that he's trying to go off to a summer trip, trying to reconnect to his roots of his old family heritage here and there, and he discovered a town leading to Innsmouth. And once he was talking to the guy who works the bus station, he was basically telling of all this stuff that Innsmouth is bad. It's this creepy place with all the other creepy people there. They have these like bulging white eyes for some reason. And there's like this type of smell too. And for some reason, they also have this need to constantly be in the water for every 24 seconds. I don't know what's with that about, but probably a medical condition. I don't know. The guy was like, and later on, the narrator in the story was telling about how creepy the guy who was driving the bus made him feel and how uneasy he felt all the way there. So eventually, when he finally got to Innsmouth, he noticed a lot of things were strange there. A lot of people were acting weird and a lot of people were staring at him. They had this weird contorted faces to them. They have these big eyes and fish-like things. And not only that, he eventually met the town drunk, Zadok, rest in peace him, who told us about what happened, about where old man Marsh was happily giving money and buying stuff from this, no, who was basically, it's been a while, who was basically had this relationship with these kinds of islands before, but when things went south, he had a new something that a lot of people wouldn't agree, which was sacrifice people for a god named Dagon to gain money and fortune to help support the island of Innsmouth. But later on, when people didn't like that, they locked him up and shit literally hit the fan for poor Innsmouth. Because without the lack of sacrifices, the fish people decided to rise up and nearly wipe out the entire population of the town. So eventually, Old Man Marsh was like, you know, guys, can we give this another shot, please? So they eventually did, and that was their basic way of life, for now. So eventually, Old Man Zadok saw something in the ocean. He ran south, and he told their narrator to run like hell out of the town. So when he went back to the bus station, the guy was like, oh, sorry, buddy, the bus is dead. We gotta repair it for tomorrow, so just stay at the Gilman Hotel for now. So he eventually did, and he noticed that the bolt was missing. So he put the bolt on, and he heard that it was basically like something knocking at the door, probably housekeeping. You know how they are. But basically, not only that he also noticed an angry mob right in front of the hotel, probably fish people, I don't know. But not only that, he started running and tried to get out of town. He was avoiding everything. He was doing the old fish shuffle. Let's go. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. I thought that was funny. The old fish shuffle. I am hilarious sometimes. But later on, when he was hiding in the shrubs, he just saw this big parade with these fish-like people with the whitish gold tinted crowns and bulging eyes walking across into the sea. And eventually he passed out. And later on in the story, if I'm correct, he later went to the police. He told the police about Innsmouth and what the hell is happening. Innsmouth would get bombed twice, I think. And eventually he actually dug some digging around. And he actually did notice a lot of strange pictures of his family members having the exact same Innsmouth appearance. And he actually did find out that Old Man Marsh's children was actually his great-grandmother. Before. And eventually he did started to have the Innsmouth look himself. And he's told to us that he will eventually have his brother released from the asylum. No, his cousin or his uncle, I remember, released from the insane asylum so they could help the others release the old ones from their imprisonment. Now, that story does say a lot, but at first in a lot of H.P. Lovecraft's work, some of the stuff that he said was pretty much untold. And he has this idea that everything that he sees or the narrator sees is really untold and they really can't describe of how horrifying it is. So we, the reader, have to think of what the hell they are seeing. And that's something to think about when we... And that's something to really think about when you're reading some of his work. Now, I'll get into other few things after this sponsorship. And we are back. So, I got a good question for everyone here. Who remembers R.L. Stine's Goosebump? Now, Goosebump, I would say, is pretty much like, let's call it Baby's First Horror Stories, right? Before Stephen King's It or The Shining. Goosebumps actually did make it big during his time. A lot of kids started reading it, and a lot of people did like it. And not only that, it also came out with two separate movies from Goosebumps. I remember seeing the first one and the second one, and at the end of the first one, R.L. Stine did make a cameo appearance. Now, when I was a kid, I remember specifically I would be terrified of Goosebumps on Cartoon Network. And every time I would see the commercials, I would quickly turn it off. Or like if I see like the beginning intro of the show, I would begin to turn the channel off as quickly as possible. Now, I don't know why, because recently today, I rewatched a couple of old episodes from Netflix of the show. And I'm thinking to myself, like, wait a minute, I was scared of this? What was so scary? This looks ridiculous. And for those of you who are wondering, it is the Mask episode, the second part of it. No, wait, the Mask 2 one. Like the horror mask. Oh, scary, spooky. But not only that, it did have an interesting take for each different story. Because I want to say it was more or less like a... I want to say it's more or less a monster of the week kind of idea. And in the beginning of each of the shows, R.L. Stine would be being like himself, would say, "Hi, folks. Now, I am going to say something about my story that's coming up next that I wrote. And I want you to realize that it's a story and not real." Something like that, right? And generally, they do try to relate it to the story as much as possible. Much like with the Mask episode, they pretty much said about how the mask would eventually change the person and how hard it would be to take off the mask. And eventually, it would like morph and contort into as an actual face for them until they discovered something of love to take the mask off. Now, much like other horror villains or like horror generic villains, it wouldn't be the last until you've seen... No, wait. It wouldn't have been the last that you've seen them, because they are most likely going to be brought up again sometime. And that can be scary. Like, an idea that a mask could be controlling you and you not of it can be scary to some people, including myself. But also, some of the stories could be pretty out there as well. Like, one, for example, was where these two kids are traveling through England and they eventually get lost from like a tour group and they somehow can't remember their parents and some weirdo is chasing them and they eventually put two and two together that they were a prince and princess of a castle. Now, when I first remember seeing that, I'm like thinking to myself, wait a minute, how is this scary? Like, to be fair, there are some creepy images there for the show, but it isn't something you can be like, "Oh my god, this episode is so scary." But I remember one thing that did catch people by storm, or at least the internet by storm, and that, my friends, is creepypasta. Creepypastas were something I felt literally came out of the blue, but for my best estimation guess, creepypastas pretty much came from, I want to say, somewhere between the year of 2009 and maybe 2012, I think. And basically, each of the stories involve, much like the previous story, or the previous talk about, R.L. Stine is pretty much like a monster of the month, and each of them are either a killer, a demon of sorts, or both. Now, a few of these stories that actually took by storm and was known to be the most scariest thing since sliced bread was Slender Man. Slender Man is described as this extremely thin man that's elongated arms and legs, has a blank face, a black suit, and a red tie. And he said to, if you look at him long enough, you would never be seen again. Now, Slender Man, I remember back in the day, was perceived as scary. And people would listen to these horror stories on the internet and think of it as true as well, that this character did exist. Or maybe not. But besides just that, like, that he was one character that we thought to be scary, but later on, the creepypasta train, or trend, I want to call it, didn't go so well anymore nowadays. But when I think about it, some of the stories did seem to be pretty good. Like, one story I remember listening to a while ago was with one character named Eyeless Lucy, I think. And it talked about how this one kid was on a camping trip with his family. He got lost in the woods. He met this one, no, Eyeless Lulu, I think. Lulu something. I know what I'm talking about. But besides just that, it was about this one kid, blah, 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 getting lost in the woods, and he eventually meets this one girl. She takes him back to his, to her cabin, and he thinks of it to be like, oh, she's innocent, until he later finds out that she is an absolute psychopath. And later, when he says that, where are your eyes? She shows him, like, the smooth skin on her face, and they slowly start to, like, open up all these, like, fleshy bits of empty eye sockets. And later, the guy sadly died to having his eyes literally gouged out. Now, that was also, in a way, scary, per se, because it's taking the idea that it's, like, this more, I want to say, unknown force that you can't either know or be able to control at all. But it's more or less something that you have to try to look out for on your own, per se, I think. And really, some of the works, or like some of the creepypastas a lot of people would talk about on the internet, were either a hit or a miss sometimes, because some of the stories would either be told by a person who has like a type of determination of reading the story, whereas some people, they pretty much had like this lackluster voice nowadays, I think. It's been a while. Much like Goosebumps, I want to say that creepypastas were pretty much like a fad back in the day. Whereas a lot of people were talking about them. They were talking about the characters. They were talking about the acts and so on. But eventually they became into something that was way different than they previously expected. And instead they became more or less both a cult following, but yet also sometimes, thing just about the characters for now, and not the stories in general. Like, one example by this that takes a interesting route was with a one about an NES Godzilla game, where the guy was like, oh my gosh, I bought this NES game from eBay or from a random seller, and next thing I knew, I found that my dead girlfriend was in it. And that was, like, perceived as something to be scary, because the idea of the characters in the game was, like, something to be interested in, because the idea was that there was, like, this creature living in the game that if you play it to a point of pissing the thing off, you will be trapped in the game, and that is something crazy, and that's something awesome. But before I think... No. Yes. No. Before I wrap up today, I just want to go over one more thing I remember as a kid, and that was these weird types of stories that you would listen to or have someone read at your local library. Now, I know what I'm talking about. I remember these stories a while ago, and I do remember some of them can be weird and so on, and much like, whereas like, Goosebumps was like baby's first horror story. These types of stories were like stories for babies, pretty much. And they weren't that bad. They had their own like little imagery here and there. And I remember specifically that some of them had their own type of I want to say abnormality to them, because each of them were different and they had their own unique takes of a horror story in general. Like, I remember one of them being with this one guy chasing these two kids in the woods. Yeah, his hands are in front of him, his fingers pointing upward, and he's saying, "Bloody fingers!" And these kids are like running away. They got into the house. When the guy went up to the house, he sees presumably one of the characters' little sister, and he says, "Bloody fingers!" And the little girl says, "Want a band-aid?" Now, I can't remember some of these stories, but I do remember them with certain characteristics in general. And I remember one of them being also abnormal, where one of them was like this one kid running from these guys with these big yellow teeth, and he's like, "Oh my god, your teeth are so big and so yellow!" And they're like, "I know, because we have gingivitis, I think." I can't remember. I'm sorry for those of you who remember these stories and I can't. But besides just that, I do want to say that there was one more story I do vaguely remember. It was basically like these two couples who knew each other as kids. So I can't remember some of these, like I said, I can't remember the name of the stories. I can't remember a lot of them, but I do remember them in bits and pieces here and there. So I remember this other story, and this is how it goes. So this last story I want to talk about before I end the podcast was pretty much where these two kids who eventually marry each other, right? When they grew up, the boy was like, "Can I take off your ribbon?" And the girl was like, "No, you can't." They grew up a bit more. They were teens. They were like, "Can I please take off your ribbon?" And she was like, "No, you can't." When they got married eventually into adult, no, they came to be adults first. And the guy was like, "Can I take off your ribbon now?" And the girl was like, "No, you can't." And eventually, when they got married, he was like whispering at the ceremony, "Can I take off your ribbon now?" "No, you can't." And eventually, when they grow old together, the girl was on her deathbed, and she was like, "Okay, now you can take off the ribbon." And eventually, he did take off the ribbon, and he found out that her head fell off. Kid stories, everyone. But like, to be think about it, these types of stories are told in different ways, as I previously said in the podcast. And some of them do have their own takes on it. And I feel as if a lot of these stories that I previously just said with like the big teeth, the yellow teeth, the fingers, or the head plopping off, those were things that we would see as kids as scary. Like blood would be scary to us because a lot of us as kids, we didn't like to, when we see a boo-boo, we didn't like to bleed that much here and there. But not only that, we would also see things like the yellow teeth. We see those to be like a very abnormal thing, and we think like, "Oh my gosh, monster!" Right? And not only that, with the head plop off, it's a head plopping off. I don't think I need to say that much. And that concludes today's episode. So before I go, I'd just like to thank all of the listeners who are listening to the podcast right now. I would also like to thank my sponsor for today, Anchor. And like I previously said, if you guys listen to each episode, you're actually helping me in return. And you could also listen to some of the other previous episodes I did on dark cartoons, horror games, or even movies. And please be sure to share this podcast with all of your friends. Anyone who likes certain things that are nerd related, I would like to say, tell them to come on down and listen on. And remember, folks, geek is fleek.